Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Voices from the Grid. And I am your host for this episode, Blue Ranger Brian Massey, being joined at the table by White Ranger Michael Lindenbaum. Hey, Mike.
Hey,
what's going
on? Hey, Bri. It's going good. Once again, you and I, we're just going right for the Zeo Crystal Quest again.
Excuse me. Hi.
Hello. What?
Oh, you guys are actually joining us for this one? How about that?
We were supposed to be here. It was on the schedule. Does that mean I don't have to be here?
No.
Can we leave?
No. So what's going to happen
is... literally anything else than talk about this episode?
I'd really rather not be here.
So what's going to happen is that Ben, Brian and I are just going to sit this one out. Y'all two have fun.
No. No.
You have to suffer.
We've already suffered for four of the quests already.
My heart breaks for you.
You gotta see it to the end. Otherwise, it's not worth it. But then again, neither is this entire arc.
Hey, Mike, watch me do this. I'm gonna lock him in place. And joining me here for this episode, Red Ranger, Sasha Kaplan.
Nope, not here. This is my life model decoy.
Yeah, Ben, if you want to get out, now's your chance. I'm giving you three. Two.
Don't leave me alone.
Joining us here is Black Ranger Ben Taylor.
It's me, your boy Ben Taylor, and I would like to let you all know my exercise routine includes running away from my problems, running late, and constantly running my mouth.
Astute diagnosis.
And so can you. All right. So today we're actually talking about not only the finale of Mighty Morphin Alien Rangers, but Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as a whole. And I know for quite a few people at this table, that's cause for celebration, is it not?
Oh, yes.
Couldn't have come soon enough.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't this have happened three seasons ago?
Oh, there it is.
Oh, man. Very hot take, so much that I dropped it almost. Obviously the big thing that's been going on that Mike and I have been talking about the last couple episodes is this Zeo Crystal quest. And pretty much everybody has gotten their crystal except for Aisha.
Should I point out this one fact? The very same Zeo Crystal that they dispersed away into all these different dimensions in the first place and then forced these kids to go chase after again.
Yeah.
Not even teenagers. They're not even old enough to sit in the front seat, kids.
Dispersed them as teenagers and then they had to go chase them as children.
Which, how else would you do it, really?
I hope Billy gets paid overtime for the babysitting.
Oh my God.
And that's just for Alpha.
We have a lot of stuff kind of also happening here as well with Hydro Hog coming, which is he's billed as the Aqua Rangers or Alien Rangers big bad.
There was an actual antagonist in this episode. I forgot about that.
Yeah, there was, and
surprisingly effective one.
Yeah.
He has been built this entire saga as their version of Zed.
Pretty much.
Then he gets one shot by a Falcon Zord.
Which is hilarious because when you finally get a look at him, you just go because I don't know about you, but for me, when I was rewatching this, I had no idea what he looked like or I couldn't remember. And I'm like, oh man, he's got to look insane, right? I mean, he's got to look on par with Zed, right? And so when I saw what looked like Genie from Aladdin,
I'm the genie from Aladdin.
Yeah. I was like, not exactly what I had in mind. Anyways, let's go ahead and dive into episode one. And I'm going to go ahead and ask some questions at the round circle here. So this one's for everybody. So I got a question for you. So at the very beginning, Lord Zed, in a fury over the Rangers having collected four out of the five Zeo crystals, he tells Rita to make Goldar steal the Zeo crystal once it's completed. Why not just steal it now? They can't complete the crystal. They're missing four parts of it, right?
Well, it's supposed to be this immense power source, isn't it? And I'm not sure how many times we've pointed out the Serpentera runs on AA batteries.
He probably needs the entire Zeo crystal to make it run for a day or an hour.
Yeah.
It's an exponential power source. Why wouldn't you want it?
I mean, sure, but then I don't know. My line of thinking on that is, if you have four out of the five parts, then they don't have it, and then you can just, you know, stronghold the final piece out of them once they get it back, because they can't turn back into adults.
Then you have to do twice as much work, right? You have to go and get the first four parts, and then you have to go and get the other part.
Well, so, that's what grunts like Goldar and Redor are for, then.
But
those two clowns are running around the command center basement trying to figure out where the place is to put that bomb that they've been trying to do for like six episodes at this point.
Rito's eating more popcorn that Goldar laid down like Hansel and Gretel. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, but like, you really want to send those two out on two errands? Like, really?
Yeah, no, you got a point there. You got a really good point there.
Sometimes I have those.
Yeah, you do.
Two minions, four arms, eight limbs, one brain.
Half of one brain.
Yeah. And then later on, not to spoil anything, but then they get amnesia. And I'm like, oh, great. So they're even less effective. Cool.
Were they ever that effective, though? Well,
I wouldn't know. It was pretty effective early on. And so was Rito.
You know, everybody
but they've definitely, we're going to talk about them later. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about them. That's definitely a plot point that we need to talk about in Zeo, but we're not there just yet. So also on that same line of thinking, Rito asks why Goldar shouldn't just let the implosion generator wipe the command center off the face of the galaxy and be done with it. Why not? I guess. I mean, sure, that again, you know, as brought up in the last question, that means that the Zeo crystal might be harder to find, but why not just, you know, have command center go boom boom?
Realize boom boom's code for a baby taking a poop, right?
Yes, I.
Okay.
Well, I caught myself on that. Sorry.
Just wanted to make sure that you knew what you were doing.
I mean, we are dealing with Rito and Goldar at the same time here.
I went boom boom.
It's a whole lot of just sort of coincidental timing, really, isn't it? I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't they? Because then it gets in the way of Zed's plan.
Yeah, it's sure. And not only that, but like, to go into your next point, you talk about Zed sending a signal out to Aquitar. You know, he's messing with the communications of the command center to get Hydrohawk. So, like, if Tweedledee and Tweedledum go in and blow up the command center, that completely screws up Zed's plan.
But I mean,
here's the ultimate reason why they didn't go and get the four pieces of the Zeo crystal. The reason why they can't wipe the command center off the face of the earth. And the reason that everything else is happening in this episode, to quote ourselves from the past, this really didn't need to be a two-part episode.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, you gotta.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, and Rito and Goldar could have gone in, planted the bomb, and left, and that would have been fine. Just put it on a timer.
There are way more interesting questions about Rito and Goldar and their plan and stealing the Zeo crystal. There are way more interesting plan questions than that.
Yep.
Like, how did they get into the command center?
They tunneled in.
They found it. They literally found like an entrance tunnel.
Not the stuff under the command center, the command center.
Oh my
god! The thing
god.
That you have to have a power coin to get into.
Until you yes. don't.
Until you don't.
Until you and find also, the back door.
Like, okay, did anybody else double take when they saw the sign with the arrow
command
pointing
center this way?
Command oh my center, god! Just, don't.
Like, this is our secret lair. Come over. Like,
guys, I actually, hold on. I have a note here. It says it was put there for Rocky.
Yeah.
I really hope there's no doors on the way to the command center. Because if he has to go in the back way, he's screwed.
But also let's be honest. The reason this is a two-part episode. I'm gonna let Ben compose himself real quick here.
That's gonna take a while, probably.
Because Sasha literally killed him.
Just go on without me.
Thank you.
Let's be honest. The real reason that they pushed this episode to be a two-parter is because of the Aisha storyline.
Rook is an idiot. Sorry, carry on.
I feel like we need to sell t-shirts or something that says Rocky's an idiot. Like, God.
Well, we can do chemistry, sort of.
I mean, okay.
We're skipping all over the place in these questions. Brian, let's get it back on track. Something about Zed and a signal to Aquitar.
But super okay, quick, yeah, though, so a VFTG merchandise. Rocky.
Not knowing how to work doors. Rocky's the kind of kid that gets stuck in a corner in a round room, right?
Oh, man.
Oh,
that's
well, wow. We can write off Steve Cardenas as a future guest on this show.
Hey, Steve Cardenas did a very good job with what he was given. What he was given was awful.
Separate the character from the actor.
Yeah, first of all, that's number one. Number two, it's not his fault that the writing for this is worse than Riverdale.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, back to the questions.
Yes, sir. Okay, so what I wrote here was, so Zed sent the first signal out to Aquitar as a decoy, which Alpha and Zordon blocked from reaching out to Hydrahog, which is actually something that took place in an episode or two prior. Zed then sends the second one out, which seems to work instantaneously. How do you think that the second one made its way to Aquitar? Like, do you think there's some kind of limit where, like, Alpha and Zordon can only block one signal per minute? Or, like, what's stopping Alpha and Zordon from blocking every signal? Like, I feel like they had to have detected that second one, right?
Well, here was the thing. I think they're distracted in general because there's a lot going on, right? They're worried about Aisha because she still hasn't returned with her quarter of the Zeo crystal. You have things happening with Lord Zed, and then you have Billy and the machines and all of this jazz. So they're distracted. And it's possible that because of the machine that is going to be powering bullshit BS science, that there's some kind of strain on the command center, right? I don't know. I'm making stuff up here because the writers are anyway.
So, we're literally trying to figure out something that was never figured out.
Exactly. So to guess a headcanon it away, it's possible that, it's possible they didn't expect Rita and Zed to send a second signal. So they weren't looking for it.
Yeah, it could have been very much like a fake out or something. It's like, oh, you know.
It could have been like 50 bajillion things.
Not to get a bit too technical here, but
okay,
certain ways of detecting things have limitations, right?
Sure.
Like, if you stack a lot of things on top of one another, a radar will detect it as one big thing, right?
Right.
So it's entirely possible that they sent the message along the exact same path. Okay. So that the command center's built-in things saw it as an echo of the first one. Not to do the writer's jobs for them, but like, we've written we've fan written these episodes way better than they have in the past.
What you're saying is the command center can detect the bleeps and the creeps at the same time.
The bleeps, the creeps, and the sweeps.
And the sweeps. Thank you.
And I refer you all to our fan casting of Skull as the White Ranger.
Yes.
The storyline we made up with it.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's at this point, it does kind of just feel like, all right, let's just get, because I know everybody in the group's like really anticipating trying to get out of Mighty Morphin. So honestly, at this point, I'm looking at that going, all right, that's not explained, whatever. I just, you know, don't care. Like, it, I feel like an exhausted mom.
It is very. Now, we've complimented season three, believe it or not, we have complimented season three for the way it has this forethought built into it, right? Like, they introduced the Zeo crystal earlier, they split it up. Now they're like, oh, blah, 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 blah. But the Alien Rangers saga definitely suffers from is it Zeo yet syndrome. They're just sort of like, can we get to Zeo now, please? And even the writers are thinking that, let alone the four of us.
Like, there was so much
a lot of hand waving. A lot of hand waving.
Yes, indeed. There was and there's specials on the DVD too, if you get the DVD, that they have the Zeo commercial specials as well that used to run before the show when it was originally airing.
Runs, right?
Yeah. And it's almost like anything that the Alien Rangers would be doing, it's already overshadowed by like Zeo's coming, and it's like they don't it doesn't feel like
they didn't show those until the reruns.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a sense of someone in the writer's room going, all right, so why don't they detect the second transmission? And the head writer going, well, there's a very simple explanation for that.
Oh, God.
That's so mean. That's my line. I don't take your, this is how science works.
You've done it before.
Oh, okay, I did. All right,
fine. I think also you got to also put in perspective that, you know, they also got to a point where with Sentai footage, they eventually had no choice but to use the Kaku Rangers.
Yeah.
And that's why we got the Alien Rangers. So it's like, this is kind of like that thing. It's like, all right, we have to bring in the other Rangers with these suits because it's the only way we're going to be able to make sense of the footage.
Speaking of which, and I'm going to bring this up now because it's not covered in any of the questions. I apologize. It's very interesting to me that they've gone, oh, the TV audience are used to seeing Tommy be the leader and he's the White Ranger. Therefore, Delphine should be the leader of the Acquisition Rangers because she's the White Acquisition Ranger. But yet when they're fighting and doing anything else, the dude in red's giving all the commands, and she's just like, yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because technically speaking, she is billed as the leader of the team. And I believe in the Sentai, the White Ranger is also the leader of the team, if I remember right.
That is true. But I think for like marketing purposes, and just because audiences are so used to red being the leader, especially in Japan, even though White was the leader, Red was still positioned in the middle for the lineup just because that's what audiences, I think, were more used to. So,
dumb question for you, Brian and Mike, who I think might have seen Kaku Ranger. Is there a sixth Kaku Ranger?
No.
No.
Ninjor is technically the sixth Ranger.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Right. But also to piggyback off of Brian's point, also something to keep in mind, and this is still an issue today, is that Saban, when he was doing it and when he got it back too, he would market it towards boys, not towards girls. So that was also something that, you know, was a big thing back in the day as well.
Yeah.
So they would make it where the Red Ranger was more of the leader, shown more as the leader, even though Delphine was the leader, because
What I also meant was the footage lent itself to that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am 100% with Sasha on this one that I like Delphine as the leader. It was very refreshing to see, at least when they were out, when they were unmorphed, to see her leading and being like, hey, I have a character and I'm not just here to shop.
Now.
Yeah.
Wait, you mean she had other priorities besides like pretty clothes?
For one episode, it was ice cream.
Can do that? But I don't know if you, so I'm gonna be honest, I actually had a really hard time getting through this episode, not just because it's poorly written, but because every time the Equestrian Rangers talked, I could feel my ears bleeding. It's just like, I can't imagine like watching all of these episodes. I mean, maybe because you're watching them like week every week, it's not as grating auditorily.
Compared to like a sit down marathon.
Yeah, because I could not. The weird voice modulation stuff, I corrected myself that time, that they did to make them sound more Equestrian, quote unquote. It was very grating on the ears.
Like, you can only talk into like a fan for so long before even you start to find your own voice annoying, I think. And it's like, that's kind of, obviously it's a little more watery sounding, but that's pretty much the effect that they got.
And like, don't get me wrong, Brian, I get the effect and I understand what they were going with. I wish they would have figured out how to do it so that it was less grating on the ears.
I think that's completely understandable.
And randomly, Billy didn't start doing it in one episode. Yeah, in the episode where they destroy the power coins, like there's a moment where Billy's talking with the Equestrian sound.
Oh, that's weird. I honestly didn't notice that.
I didn't pick that one up, yeah. Mm-hmm. But Brian, I see that you have a question for me.
Yes, okay. Mike, this question goes out to you specifically because you've been my brother in arms on these episodes. Can you believe that as of episode 9, Goldar and Rito are still lost down in the bowels of the command center?
So, Brian, I have a question in counter of your question. What was a very popular show, animated show, in the 90s on MTV around the very same time as this show?
Very popular. Beavis and Butthead?
Yes, because Rito and Goldar, I am not surprised by this, because they are the Beavis and Butthead of this right now. Like, this is something I could see Beavis and Butthead getting lost in school, just walking in school. They can't even get the class. This is Rito and Goldar. I am not surprised by this at all.
Hold on.
As somebody who's currently rewatching season 1 of Boy Meets World, there's been at least 3 episodes back to back that have had a Beavis and Butthead reference. So I'm going to go on a limb and say for some ridiculous reason, this show resonated with people.
It was huge. They got a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrifying. And I'm very glad I was not in this country when that was a thing.
I mean, it was no worse than like Jackass back in the 2000s, I guess. I don't know.
Except Jackass, Except Jackass is still getting movies. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, to answer the question, no, I'm not surprised. They made, and actually, I'm glad that I came with the Beavis and Butthead reference, because that's essentially what they made Rito and Goldar. They made them Beavis and Butthead.
They did.
Yeah.
That, I mean, like, they are full on. In fact, they didn't make them Beavis and Butthead. They made them Bulk and Skull.
They made them what Bulk and Skull were. Yeah. That's actually an even better reference. Yeah.
So next season, when Bulk and Skull and Rito and Goldar are together, you get this. Wow, haven't Bulk and Skull come so far?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that's the answer to your question. I believe you have another one, and I'd actually like to be the first one to answer this one when you ask it.
Okay.
I haven't seen these questions, so I'm intrigued. This is all. I'm here as the blank slate, people. I didn't read the questions.
And that's perfectly valid. Is it just me, or does Hydra Hog look less like a hog that has Hydra powers and more like a ripoff of Genie from Aladdin?
You know, to answer that question, I want to say yes, and I'm just glad that they didn't get somebody to impersonate Robin Williams, because then Power Rangers would have been some massive legal problems on that one.
Like, oh my God, how that would have been the easy way out of that. Like, let
me ask you something. That specific monster is from Kaku Ranger, correct?
Yes. There is Kaku Ranger footage in episode 2, I believe, of him.
Did that monster specifically work with water?
He's got Navy written on his shoulder pad, Mike. His shoulder pads are literal maritime mines.
Dude's got a point.
Yeah.
So I would have been alien... from another planet has Earth-based weaponry as shoulder pads and the word Navy written on them. Also,
it's a very simple explanation.
Also, to not be that guy, but to absolutely be that guy. Hog doesn't necessarily refer to him having to look like a pig. It could just mean that he's like hogging up all the resources.
Yeah.
Which makes more sense.
He looks like a blue Patrick Star is what he looks like.
You're right. Sure. That's exactly it.
I couldn't really make heads or tails of his face. I was like, his face looks like something, but I can't really. Okay. Like, sure. He's a monster.
It's a monster. It's an alien. Don't question it.
And he's blue. So.
Dabu dee, dabu die.
So I would say, I don't think he looks like a genie ripoff. I think he just looks bizarre. That's not a great answer, but that's the only one I got.
Yeah. I don't think he looks that much of a genie ripoff, but I can see why you think that.
I mean, definitely the red sash.
It's the diaper.
Yeah, the red plus the blue, and yeah, there was just, I was like, huh, because Aladdin would have come out around that time, so it could have been something that was
definitely
Aladdin
the pants.
Came out in 92 or 94.
Wait, Aladdin came out in 92, I think, because what was it? It was, wait, hold on.
1992.
Little Mermaid.
Yeah, so this is we're in like 1995 at this point.
But keep in mind that they're still coming out with Aladdin movies direct to DVD, though.
Anyway,
that's right.
The thing that makes him look like Genie is the fact that he's blue and he's got big pants.
Yeah, he's got MC Hammer pants on, basically.
Some parachute pants on.
Yes. Okay, so my next question. And this has to do overall with Alien Rangers and how effective they are in battle, because they see that Hydra Hog has shown up on Earth and they get into this giant fight. And during the middle of the fight, Hydra Hog falls on his back after being hit with some swords, and they kind of just deflect off of him like they're nothing. He takes a back bump, basically, and the Rangers declare that they've won, even though it's painfully obvious that they haven't, to the point that even Bulk and Skull are like, dude, what are you doing? The Alien Rangers cannot be this dumb, right? Like, do you think that this is them being like that unaware in a fight? Or do you, like, what do you think that is?
Well, part of the issue was that they hadn't fully like rejuvenated when Hog shows up. Right.
Sure.
So they're a little loopy on oxygen.
I mean,
then
I
they sort
would
of get nerfed for the remainder of the episode, or good chunk of the episode.
That, and it's funny to me too, because at any point, Hydra Hog could have literally just put his hand on one of the Alien Rangers and been like, "All right, yep, I'm taking out your."
Which he did.
Which he did
the entire team. Like,
yeah. He eventually did that.
The bigger problem is, like, right after he does that, he goes, oh, by the way, I'm going to summon a water tsunami. Dude, that's plan A.
I mean...
I'm just saying. If you can conjure a water tornado, that's plan A.
But that, like, but I think, like, that's part of the issue, that, like, his plan wasn't really, like, his plan was just sort of to distract the Rangers and to make a nuisance and cause chaos so that the Rangers would be looking, what's that term when you're, like, do close-up magic? Misdirection? There you go. Thank you, Ant-Man and Wasp. So it's just misdirection, because everybody's focused on saving the Equation Rangers and restoring the water, that nobody's paying attention to what's going on with Aisha or what's going on or where Rito and Goldar are. And like, so they're keeping the Rangers busy.
Dude, where's my Goldar?
it definitely feels like, as we go into episode 2, like the resources and like the team in of itself is spread very, very thin. Like, it's almost like, there's a million things going on at the same time, but also there's not at the same, like, it doesn't feel, sorry, what's up, Ben?
There's two things here that I want to bring up. First of all, it is somewhat fair that they have a moment of celebration, because when Hydro Hog was brought up in, I think it's Sowing the Seeds of Evil, they say they've never really had any kind of victory over him before. Like, they've not even got this much of a knock on him. So for them to have a little bit of a celebration is fine. To think they've won the fight is stupid.
Thank you.
The other thing is, something has been bugging me, absolutely bugging me, about the Alien Rangers intro, right? And it was watching this episode in this fight that it struck me what it was. Every other main character that's in the intro has their child version accredited, except Bulk and Skull.
Yeah, you're right.
The one Billy kid
was credited for the one, two episodes he was in. And then they've never acknowledged the kids that play the young Bulk and Skull. They still show Jason Narvi and Paul Schreier.
Yeah, but I do know that, like, they credit them obviously in the end credits, but it's not the same.
I'm talking about the intro credits. It's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same. So
I was just sitting there and I was like, that's what's been bugging me. Because that moment where all the water goes out and they're swimming on their bodyboards, I laughed so hard and I was like, all right, you got me, kids. Wait, hang on a minute.
What are your names? Because I will say too, like, you cannot give me the argument that, like, oh, we didn't have enough time in the intro, because, like, they totally could have, like, given them like 2 or 3 seconds. Put them up. I agree with you.
Those are the two things I wanted to bring up at that point.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a good fair points.
Yeah.
And one little throwaway question before we get into episode 2. And we are going to chug along here, but I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool to see what looks like an older command center that's in disuse when Goldar and Rita are planning the implosion device. What did you think of that? Because, like, I do want to stress, I don't think that that's supposed to be part of the, like, new chamber that's going to be revealed in Zeo, spoilers. Like, I feel like that's, like, a disused part, almost like an old, like, TARDIS control room that, like, you know, the Doctor's no longer using anymore. That's what that looked like to me. What did you think?
It's sort of, like I said, it was like the long way around to the command center for Rocky when he got lost, but it sort of feels a little out of place. It was sort of like, we need a storage room where Alpha can keep his
spare parts.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
That's how I felt
too. Every winter.
That's how I felt. I felt it was just more like a storage closet.
Yeah.
That's probably what explains how Goldar and Rita were able to get in, because it was unguarded, because it's, you know, old parts that nobody will want.
I mean, it was definitely built in what's the word? In relation to the budget that they had for that. I think it's like, okay, put some boxes up and, like, hey, we have an old Alpha costume here. Maybe kind of make it look like this used to be, like, where Alpha and Zordon would hang out. But I have a
question about this, about kind of before we get into part two and how this is whole figured out. But, like, you guys were saying, I'm trying to understand kind of the logic of doing Alien Rangers. And the only thing I've found out is that we had Sentai footage and we had to find a way to use it. But then you have the kid actors and you have David Yost, and that's just par for the course for several episodes. And I'm just like, what the rest of the cast is just, like, on vacation and David Yost isn't.
Well, I think this is very much supposed to be Billy Swan song. This was Billy's different shade of pink arc, because he won't be a ranger next season.
No, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, because, like, and Ben, you and I, we did it in our episode, like, Another Brick in the Wall, where we talked about how, like, that's the last time we got to see Billy, you know,
be Billy.
Be Billy, but also take down a monster by himself.
He solos a monster in that episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like it that you could tell was like really that beginning of his swan song right there. Like that was the last time he ever morphed, all that stuff. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's this is very this arc when it comes to Billy is very much his swan song. While he's not exiting the series like Kim did,
yeah,
like Amy Jo Johnson did,
yeah,
here specifically. When he does exit the series, that's a whole nother story that we're gonna get into. But they actually do quite a lot of highlighting of what makes Billy Billy. It's his intelligence. It's his care for the others. It's his mental fortitude. It's mm-hmm. and that's what this arc is. It's Billy's swan song as a ranger.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And if anything, it just makes me love him more as a ranger. Granted, he's not rangering anymore, but like he's still, you know, even without the power, he's still finding a way to keep things going. And I mean, that's just pure Billy right there, which is like, you know, he grows so much in these three seasons, and it is a shame to see him like go in Zio, I think.
We'll get there.
But yeah, but man, like
if you think about it, in a 43 episode season, right? If you include Alien Rangers,
mm-hmm.
you had 2 10 plus episode exit arcs. You had not 9 10 for Kim.
Yeah.
And you had 9 10 here.
Mm-hmm.
That's some respect paid to those two characters.
Yep.
Definitely.
I agree. And what's funny though is to me it definitely feels like when Kim exits, like it feels like it's happening, but like and we'll get into this in episode 2 when I get into these questions, but like with Aisha, like I don't know about you, but even on rewatch I never really got the feeling, again, like I almost forgot also that she leaves, and then I had to remind myself, oh yeah, it's Tanya as the Yellow Ranger in Zio. I don't know if I was shocked, but it definitely felt more abrupt.
We also just to go back to the tunnels under the command center thing for a moment.
Sure.
Because we will talk about Tanya later. All right. Yes. We'll talk about Tanya and Aisha later.
Sure.
I quite liked that they used the tunnels under the command center for Rito and Goldar.
It's
because we'd gotten a hint of that back in the White Ranger episodes, because Billy's looking down on wherever they're making the White Ranger from the current command center, right? Mm-hmm. He goes through that one door and looks down through the vent. And then it's very good foreshadowing for the fact that there is a structure under the command center for the next episode.
Fair.
It's very good foreshadowing.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I agree.
And to be fair, though, going back to the Aisha thing, we do learn about her quest at like the very beginning of this episode.
Yeah, we do.
And we are introduced to Child Tanya pretty quickly, and like what's going on, because
the animals are sick, guys.
Yeah, because like Aisha lands in Africa. She is saved by another girl named Tanya, and they find out like the animals are sick, and obviously
we cut this segment.
Yeah. Hey. I just read that little piece. Nothing else. Nothing
sure.
else. Because but we
no, it's important to mention, guys, that the animals, they're sick.
Yeah, they're sick. And this is where
did we mention the animals are sick?
But this is kind of like, also the first
shadow. And there's the moment where Tanya's like, yeah, and even like the wildlife researchers can't help. And then like 7-year-old Tanya's like, I used to work in an animal shelter. Maybe I can help them.
Right. And I'm like, yes.
It's like a 3-year-old trying to send someone to the moon.
But the thing is,
how science works.
Hey. I actually have a note here. It says working in an animal shelter definitely qualifies one to help wildlife ecosystems in Africa.
But
especially when plagues are involved, it's like what?
But yeah, in a way,
like,
but
she's totally a biologist now because she like worked in an animal shelter.
But
that
in a way,
imbues you with knowledge.
But in a way, though, and it really kind of harks into the next episode, is that the whole thing with Aisha with the pet clinic and stuff like that. You know, it was the foreshadowing to this, to what eventually does happen. So it's like, of course, of course it's stupid. Like, oh, the animals are sick and blah, blah, blah. But it makes perfect sense.
Am I the only one that thought it was the Zeo crystal making them ill?
Yeah, no, I thought that too.
But, well, I mean, keep in mind, for Rocky, he had to go into a volcano to get his, and the Zeo crystal is actually causing the volcano to be, you know,
unstable.
So there's a precedent there.
Short trip
there's...
for Aisha then.
Yeah.
So there's a precedent there for like, hey, the Zeo crystals are causing chaos happening in these areas. Once you remove it from that area, everything's fine. There's that precedence there.
Yeah.
So it's like,
you know, Mike, I'm sorry. Like, I get that their attempt to, this is an attempt at foreshadowing her obsession, her whole thing with like, oh, animals and working with them. Like, and I think there was at one point she wanted to be a veterinarian or something, I remember. But if I wish the focus had been less on the animal shelter and maybe her like doing research or like studying animal anatomy or like talking about like working in a, like, I'm still stuck on the working at a animal shelter, which is largely cats and dogs, does not qualify someone to be an expert on lions and gazelles. Like, and
there's that, I keep bringing it up, but there's that one episode in the Different Shade of Pink arc where Cat actually turns into a cat monster that they fight, right? Mm-hmm. It would have been really interesting if at that point Aisha had to go do some research into ways that cats are vulnerable, right? And actually, like, develop
that would have been pretty on par.
Gosh darn character. Anyway, let's move into episode 2.
Oh boy. Yeah. All right. So everybody, before we get into this, I need to let you know this is the final episode of MMPR that we have to discuss as a group. Are you excited yet?
I'm more excited than Rocky with an open door.
Look, let me explain to you. I have been ready for this episode since like
we finished Day of the Dumpster.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm always ready for this episode. I am so ready for this episode. Let's just get into it.
Okay, so for one last episode, and I think we already covered this, but I'll just go ahead and read this. For one last episode, Billy gets to make a machine with Alpha, which involves reversing the polarity. This feels appropriate, right? For like the final episode, Billy sciencing a thing.
Yes. Billy sciencing always.
Also, bit of a props to the script writers here. They actually used the right technobabble in order to make clouds rain, you ionize them.
So wait, this is actually how science works?
That technically is how science works.
Oh my God, ring the bell. We have a winner, everybody.
For the episode.
Not precisely how science works, but at least the right terminology.
Close enough, my friend.
You don't tend to do it with a laser through a video machine. But
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers really did deliver in the last episode.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and skip ahead. Billy and Alpha break up the cloud by firing the laser into the viewing globe. Guess they don't even need to take the device out to the side anymore, do they?
Guess not.
Like,
They got tired of the tank.
Remember, Brian, if they go outside, it's more budget.
Remember, Brian, if they go outside, the Tangas will break it because they're very bad at defending these things.
I feel like
that's a good point. Did we see the Tangas in this episode?
No,
I don't remember.
No. I don't know. I know because it's all.
There was not a Tanga to be had in this episode.
Which means that there's no more Tangas, pretty much. I think. Yeah. Well, I think they might show up.
The only thing that misses the theme music.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead and get into the big thing here. What are your thoughts so far on Aisha's Zio quest for the crystal? Like, I held off on talking about this in episode one for a few reasons. So obviously, like, we've covered this. She runs into Tanya, who saves her from the lions that are sick from a plague. They get to this village Tanya calls home for now. She is an orphan, and this is her village. And I believe there's, like, this is, like, 50 years in the past, just for reference.
I'm going to skip out on this conversation, because this is going to come up later when we get to something else. Okay. Y'all have fun.
Okay. So, so Tanya and Aisha, well, Tanya introduces Aisha to this woman named Ashala, who we can infer is her great aunt. A few things come into play here, one of which being Aisha going to veterinarian school and being able to help. But the big thing that happens here is that Ashala gives Tanya the Zio crystal, but then hopes that she will stay to help. So far, thoughts on Tanya's story, and would you have given her the Zio crystal beforehand, like Ashala did, before saying, hey, you need to stop. You need to stay here and help out, or requesting help?
I don't get it. It's kind of like, this is the part where it's very weak in writing, because, like, there's, again, we've talked about how, like, Aisha is not in any way more knowledgeable than the wildlife experts that we have never seen in this episode.
No.
Right? And it's just sort of like, this is very clearly just sort of here to write out Aisha. And, like, and it feels like there it's a write out, right? Like, just like the peace conference was there only to write out those characters. At least with Kimberly, we felt her desire to leave to an extent, right?
Right.
It made sense for her character that this is the trajectory she would be on. Here, it just feels like, yeah, okay, they're writing this character out. We got it. But Tanya, like, okay, Tanya, I never got an understanding of, like, why Tanya would be a great replacement. It's just sort of like, look, the first child I met that is good at things. I don't know.
Yeah, you'll take my place just fine. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, okay, cool. I hope you like the color yellow.
And granted, like, Tanya does come into her own as we get into Zio and Turbo, but, like, right now, it's just a random kid.
But wait.
There's
this
more?
What's up? This was the prophecy.
Oh my god, what?
Come again?
So, at the end of the Zio quest, and they get the crystal, Aisha hands the crystal over to Tanya, and Tanya goes in Aisha's place.
We're supposed to be talking about the Tanya replacement later.
Yeah, but...
I'm saving something for that.
Oh god.
Hey Brian, can we just get this now? Like, in the whole Tanya thing, because, like, quite honestly, let's be honest, when Tanya arrives, Zordon's like, oh yes, just as the prophecy said, you know. So it was, like, planned that Aisha was always, like, Zordon foresaw it always.
Yeah. Which, I mean, when does Zordon also,
we will get to this, trust me.
Okay.
Okay. Believe me, I have way more questions that we can discuss. Yes, and I guess
bring us back
to Alien Rangers fighting Hydro Hog here. So my next question, it's more of a statement, but it's also like a point of discussion. For one final time, we get a Megazord battle in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and they give us a fake out in this fight, which I thought was really clever. For the final episode, we get a fake out where the final blow would have landed. You hear the music swelling up, go, go, pow. And, like, all of a sudden, this Shogun Megazord gets taken out. What if it had just ended there and, like, all of a sudden the Curb Your Enthusiasm music started playing or something? And, like, what are your thoughts on this fake out? You know what I mean? Like, it just... It feels like for one final episode of MMPR, the editors or, like, the writers are just like, yeah, let's have some fun with this.
Ryan, someone's having your microphone, mate.
Oh,
you're good now. You're good now.
Okay.
You just sounded like you're an equation for a moment.
Fitting. So thoughts on Megazord fake out moment?
Yeah, yeah, like Shogun, they faked out, like, yeah, they faked out the final blow, which I thought was like really cool. Like, I was like, okay, cool. They're kind of messing with the audience's expectation, because you wait for that to happen every episode. It's like, okay, yeah. You see the sword come out and you're like, okay, fight's done. So like, for that to not happen and then Hydro Hawk just be like, no, actually, I got something for you. It's like, I thought that was really cool. And that felt like it belonged in a finale to me. I don't know. What about you? No?
I mean, it pays off to the narrative of what they're leading up to end this episode and season. I mean, it really does, if you think about it. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the first time we've seen a Zord destroyed that would end an episode.
No, they did that with the Thunder Megazord.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dino Megazord, too. But, I don't know. I feel like for the finale of MMPR, it definitely... it belongs here. I haven't gotten to see much of it or discuss it much, at least not in a round table. But it might be the coolest looking sword combo, in my opinion. What do you think of the Shogun Mega Falcon sword? Because I just think it looks really cool.
I kind of find it. Now, when you say the Falcon Megazord, you're talking about the original.
No, the one they use in this episode, the Shogun Megazord, Falcon Megazord, Zord.
Where he's got like the blasters kind of in the chest.
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking about the one that they use with the Ninja Megazord originally.
The Shogun Megazord.
No.
But this is the same Falcon Zord.
I'm talking about the Falcon Zord itself. That's the one from Ninja.
There is no other Falcon Zord. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, it's kind of weird that that's the one out of all of the other Zords previously used that was able to combine with the Shogun.
Counterpoint, that's Tommy's Zord.
Okay, fair. All you have to do, Tommy's Zord. Okay, yeah, all right. Let's walk away.
We kind of have to throw that in there. So let me go ahead and wrap this up now. So most of these two episodes have been filler, and these questions have been kind of avoiding.
And for the reference, since you asked, you think it looks pretty neat. My favorite Mighty Morphin Era Zord is still the Thunder Megazord.
It's a solid choice.
The samurai looking one.
It's a solid opinion. They mostly just look the same to me.
Mm.
Oh man, I could not disagree with you more, Sasha.
I mean, if I had to pick like an individual Zord, then like yes, fine. I have my favorites, but beyond that, it's just look, I don't watch Power Rangers
for the Zords.
For the Zord fights. I'm sorry. I don't. So that puts me in a minority here.
But hey, that's okay. And you know what? That's perfectly valid, because like as a Power Ranger, like you can get many different things out of Power Rangers. That's not a problem, you know? Exactly. Like I love the Zords. You don't? That's cool. We're still fans. Okay. It does feel like, and we've discussed this, these episodes do kind of feel like filler. So I have some big questions brought up by these episodes. Thoughts on Aisha being replaced by Tanya? The whole changing history and her family being there when things are back to normal thing is odd at best and world-breaking at worst for me.
I think Ben wants to go first.
Ben just like ominously puts down a can of Dr. Pepper in front of the camera and just opens it.
Damn. Time for my can of whoop ass.
All right. Ben, the floor is yours.
Although, real quick, Ben did open the can, but it was kind of talked over by accident.
It's fine.
Sorry about that.
I'm trying. I understand this is a kid's. We are trying to keep this family friendly. It is incredibly difficult. What the hell is this nonsense? Like, seriously. Just for a moment. Not only Do they hand wave away all these problems by like, oh, we have sent the Zeo crystal to different dimensions? No, you haven't. You sent them into the past. You sent Rocky to the 1936. You sent Adam to ancient Korea. You sent Kat to the mid-20th century in Australia. You sent Aisha to Africa. That's not another dimension. That's other points of the timeline. Those create paradoxes. That's how the universe ends. And you knew. Oh, my God. Zordon, you knew all of this was coming. You knew that you would have to send Aisha back in time to discover Tanya, to get the Zeo crystal, to come back and have everyone else in the command center go, and who the hell are you? Where is our friend? Which means you knew the Zeo crystal would be a problem, which means you knew everything would go back in time, and you did nothing to stop it!
For reference, Ben's hat flew somewhere during this rant.
Oh my God.
And there's like some spiky like hair that like this is a person that's been staring at like a murder board in his basement for a while.
And not only that, for like 10 episodes earlier in the season, you had this strange woman come out of nowhere and be like, "Oh, hello, I'm Australian and I'm kind of cookie and you're going to be my friends." And wait, I'm evil? Dang, yo! And then this strange child turns up from the mid-80s and is like, "Oh, yeah, let's just trust her and make her a Power Ranger."
Well, Aisha sent her, so it must be fine.
No, we have no proof of that. We only have Tanya's word for it.
But Zordon, he knew.
He's an idiot. And on top of that, you have Tanya, who is from the mid of the 1980s, who turns up in the command center and goes, "This is perfectly normal." She doesn't have any form of culture shock. She's not like, talking robot, giant floating head, like weird alien things.
Well, did she see Zordon's floating head in the sky when he was talking to Aisha?
Right, but she didn't know that was necessarily his natural form.
I do feel like,
you okay?
I do feel like that would be the equivalent of only talking with like some like a friend in communique, like video chat, and like only seeing their head, and then like you get to meet up. And
do you know what Tanya's gonna be when she steps outside and sees things like cell phones,
car, well, like,
the internet? Give it a couple years.
Just.
Oh. Deep breath, Ben. It's almost over. It's almost over.
Because it carries on through Zeo. She has no emotional resonance for any of this through Zeo.
Of course not.
Never once does she go, that wouldn't have happened in the village.
How often do we have Power Rangers and consequences long term?
I think there's an episode where she goes snowboarding in Zeo, and I'm like, huh?
Good for her.
There's a whole three-parter where they go snowboarding after the Dear John letter.
And then doesn't she, like, run a radio show in Turbo?
Yup.
Wait.
Which makes it all the more wild.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay.
And
wow.
For the record, Ben has recollected the hat.
Yes.
Found the hat.
And of all the things, of everything, this is a kid who grew up for 3 years in what is only presumably the 80s because Earth wound back 10 years from 1990, what was it, six?
Five?
Something. Yeah. 95,
yeah. So let's say to 1985. At which point, Tanya, in order to move forward 10 years to be a junior in high school, because they don't graduate until Turbo, if I remember rightly. How old's a junior in high school?
17, 16.
So at this point, Tanya's probably six. 6 years old.
Yep. And then she's having
lived
in
a, having lived with a tribe in Africa for 3 years, has no trace of an accent.
I
she would have been learning to speak with these people
who conveniently all speak English.
Yes.
Like, My, your English is fantastic for living out here in Africa.
And it just so happens to be that Aisha's great aunt is there. And she's like, and my mom once told me this story about my great aunt, Boobity Blump.
That we've never heard of before.
And this one woman happens to be sitting right there and doesn't go, what do you mean your great aunt? I haven't had any kids yet.
Yeah.
Not once bringing up the fact that there was a timeline paradox here. This is not how time travel works.
Yeah, also to kind of piggyback Ben's fabulous rant on temporal mechanics, the fact that Zordon was like, ah, yes, this is all how it was supposed to be. And I'm like, how do you know that?
And what? When you come back, when you send Tanya back, your parents will have forgotten you ever, blah, blah, blah. No.
I have a note here about this. It's, how does Zordon know the exact temporal effects? Like, okay, fine, you can say like, oh, he's an blah blah cosmic BS being, whatever, he understands temporal mechanics, which he clearly doesn't, but like, he can't know the exact effect that Aisha's existence in this timeline will have,
unless he does, because writing, I guess. Well, which
he would like, know, but he would know because it would have happened already.
Ow. I'm sorry. I'm getting a time travel headache. Ow.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. I've ranted. Everyone else should get to put in their piece now.
Oh my god.
And I'm gonna sit here and drink my can of whoop ass.
Doctor Who is not this confusing at times. It's like, you know, like
Doctor Who has significantly better explanations.
Yes, absolutely.
There's a reason why, like, he doesn't mess with fixed points in time.
And which absolutely, this feels like it would be a fixed point in time, doesn't it?
Yo, Crystal, like, hell yeah. Especially if there's a prophecy about it.
Which, that we never really got details on.
Can we just go ahead and say for a second, this is like the second time that Zordon's pulled that excuse out of his ass and just been like, oh yes, the prophecy has been fulfilled. And I'm like, sure. Okay, cool.
This would be the prophecy you wrote this morning on the toilet paper you wiped your butt with.
Yeah.
If you have a fight.
Oh my god. Yeah, he's kind of like
Tanya should be showing up in the command center and going, holy crap, shoes.
You know, like Shuri from Black Panther, when she goes like, what are those?
No. Shuri grows up in a technologically advanced, you know, country. Her complaint was not exactly the shoes that her.
The fact that they existed, the fact that he was wearing them,
yes. Because they were ugly and awful. Right.
But it's about the delivery, though. That was the point on that.
Yeah.
I don't want to write.
Can we move on? Because I'm getting angry.
Brian, just move on to the ending. All right. Go.
Don't rush the host.
And I'd like to point out, I'm only getting angry. If that wasn't me angry before.
He's seen Ben angry. Let's not make him angry. Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about, let's center ourselves, take a deep breath. Goose Frava. Okay, cool. Whatever.
Breathe in, breathe out.
All right.
Rocky in a round room.
So the command center blows up.
Backtrack a little bit.
How about we get to the part where they all become adults again?
Yeah. Right. You got a little ways to go there, Brian.
Right. Okay. So the Zeo Crystal is finally assembled after that, which we won't talk about anymore because Ben's turning into a tomato. He's turning into the Red Ranger for all the wrong reasons. The world is put back to normal and the Rangers are adults again, only for the command center to blow up after they send off the alien Rangers. So they send off the alien rangers who are just like, well, we've learned a lot. Bye.
Did you?
No, there's a funny bit that I actually have a note on, because so the, you know how like the entire time the Zeo crystal has been in the center of the room, like you cannot freaking miss it. It's right there, right? It's in this machine. Yeah. So the other rangers teleport back after Rito and Goldar take the Zeo crystal, and Tommy goes, what's wrong? And I'm like, what the heck do you think is wrong? There's a giant crystal missing.
You know, as someone who has the power of the, like, what is it, the winged lord of the skies, who's supposed to have, which those animals have amazing eyesight.
He has like,
you can't see for crap.
Like, maybe he can see Billy's glasses. Like, let's find those.
Yeah, he's not using them. He's got contacts now. Yeah, man. What's like, what's wrong? Like, dude, like,
what's wrong? Gee.
The thing that you have been looking for the last however many episodes, like 5-6 episodes, is suddenly gone.
Yep.
And Tommy, I don't know if you should be the leader anymore, but yeah.
What you got, Ben?
Oh, it's coming.
Would you like
Goose Rava, Van? Goose Rava.
Okay.
Deep breath.
So it's only after the Rangers leave and say bye to the alien Rangers who.
The alien Rangers that have been openly acknowledged by Earth. That have been all over the news. The fact that aliens exist has come to light. The fact that there are these people from another planet that have come to save us, that were openly morphing and showing they were aliens on the news. And then for three seasons, Earth just forgets. Because everyone else remembers everything else that happened when they were young. When time was run back, everyone remembers it.
I mean, I really don't have an explanation for that. I really don't.
There's a very like, simple explanation.
I could sit here and try and come up with something and try and look smart, but no, I got nothing.
If everyone else had forgotten all of the other stuff that had happened when time had been wound back, that would have been one thing. But they don't. They actively remember it.
Let's not turn my time travel headache into a time travel migraine, because I kind of feel like it's, you know, the flame.
I'm gonna go back to drinking my head.
I might have some time travel Advil for you if you need that here. So
I think I'll be okay, as long as we sort of like just
someone
like,
call the temporal authorities.
Yeah, I'm not ready. No. Let's not get those people. I'm not ready for that. Don't call Kong the Conqueror. Like, let's just move on.
Where's Jen Scott at this point, man? It's just like, hey, yo, y'all are messing up with the timeline.
But remember, there was a prophecy, so this was supposed to happen.
Yeah, which is probably why Time Force has not been dispatched yet to kick their butt.
When Jen Force hasn't shown up and capped someone.
I was praying for it. So
she just pops out of nowhere and just blat right in the back of Tanya's head and disappears. Yes! Problem solved.
What was that about prophecies being fulfilled? Huh?
Time Force.
She like drags Aisha in by her ear. She's like, no, that's a bad Yellow Ranger.
All right, then, to get back to this episode.
So, okay, all that happens with the alien rangers who go bye-bye. And like, there's no crowd for them whatsoever, like to say, oh, bye, everybody. Goldar and Rito come in. They steal the Zeo crystal after having set the implosive device, which that's an implosive device, but that looks like an explosion to me, but okay.
Don't question it.
Things go boom. Obviously, all this leads into Power Rangers Zeo, but I'm not going to lie. When I was a kid, that was insane to me. And the fact that you had to wait that long to figure out what was going to happen, like, it did feel like, oh man, like, and I don't know about you, but to me, it felt like that the whole moment just felt, they could have just ended it without a single word, just the Rangers. Yes, Sasha.
No, yes to all of that, first of all. Second of all, okay. I agree with you until the devastation. So I watched the episode on YouTube, and when I was like, oh wow, right, they blow up the command center, and it's this really, like, it should have been very ominous because kids, like, had grown up, you know, spend the last 3 years with these characters, and to see the command center blown up and without knowing what happened to Zordon and Alpha, that had to be really, like, big, like, holy fudge brownies, here's a cliffhanger.
It was humongous.
But the issue I have is 2 seconds later, they play the bloopers from the episode during the credits.
Yeah. And that's right after, like, Tommy's just like, oh man, this might actually be the end of the Power Rangers. And I'm like, you could have literally just had them staring without a single word, and that would have told the entire story.
Yep. Power Rangers will get better at cliffhanger endings, but yeah, I agree with you completely, Brian.
Mike hasn't spoken in a while. Come on, Mike.
I mean,
I know you're tired from doing the rest of the Zeo Crystal arc, but
I mean, I just find the whole sequence of events from Alien Rangers leaving, Goldar and Rito actually successfully plant the bomb, steal the Zeo Crystal, and then, you know, the command center just exploding. Although it's interesting though, because, like, if I remember right, Goldar and Rito don't escape the command center successfully. So they get kind of exploded too. So I agree with Sasha when she says, it's like, oh yeah, you have this great ending, you put it on a cliffhanger, blooper reel.
And the blooper reel, funny enough, starts right in the moment where Billy sort of lays over the
ground
terminal or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just like, you just invalidated this entire.
Yeah.
Did they show the bloopers on the first showing? Or is that just?
I think what we got on the Shout Factory DVDs is actually what originally aired.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I remember season 3, they had bloopers the entire time. And I completely agree with Sasha about the whole blooper thing, because Billy laying, like, he's Steve Rogers, basically, where he, like, lays his body on that control panel, which is blowing up, because he's like, I got to save my friend. And this has repercussions. I'm going to remember this, because it's very important going into Zeo that happens. That's a big moment. That's a really, really big moment.
And I'm not going to spoil it if, you know, you're watching along with us. Yeah, but it's like, and then to see him, like, going, ha-ha! It's like, man, okay. Like, maybe, I don't know, I guess,
maybe this episode shouldn't have had the bloopers.
I mean, and not only that, but another point that I want to bring up, and, like, I know Ben opened up his can of whoop ass, which, by the way, you know, good choice of what you're actually drinking with the Dr. Pepper, good sir, as I have a 12 pack of Dr. Pepper cream soda right here by my feet.
Nice.
But like, going back to Tanya super quick, because I haven't talked in a while, but
does anyone else want to say anything about Tanya? Then you were both very quiet.
Well, I was letting you have your moment, you know, but one thing I will put out there is, like, when Tanya kind of gets older, like, and they do the time thing, like, she does have that, she does have, like, a little hint of, like, shock, but then it's like, oh, hi, I'm Tanya. And it's like, okay, hi, how are you? Welcome to the class.
She does the model smile.
Yeah, I know. It's like I'm awkward and I'm wearing these clothes I've never seen before, but hi. Like, it was just one of those weird things for me personally.
Yeah.
Not a big thing. But yeah, overall, like, I like the cliffhanger. It was a good cliffhanger.
I can imagine how effective that cliffhanger was as a kid.
And, like,
oh yeah.
And honestly, however, As a kid, though, watching the bloopers, Brian, you probably have a better recollection of this because I wasn't really actively watching season three when it was airing. But as a kid, you see the episode with the cliffhanger. Do you really think of it as a child? Do you really think of anything of the blooper reel? Because like us as adults, we see the blooper reel and go, oh, well, they just ruined the cliffhanger ending for us because they just made it less serious. But for a child, they probably doesn't have that same effect on them.
Well, again, like, well, not again, but as a kid, like, I very specifically remember with this episode, I was at my grandma's house. Like, I think we were having, and this is not going to be like a long winded story, believe me. But like, I remember, like, I was over at my grandma's house in Colorado, and she had a TV in her room that I used to be able to watch like wrestling and Power Rangers on and all that. And I very distinctly remember watching this episode on that TV and then like seeing that the bloopers came up and like running out of the room because I didn't care about the bloopers. And I was sitting there going, oh my God, the command center blew up. And I had to tell my mom. I was like, Mom, holy crap. The command center is broken. Like, you know, like, so that was what I cared about. I didn't really, so, the bloopers were there as an incidental.
So what you're essentially saying is that from a child perspective, you're more traumatized by the command center blowing up.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, we've got to look at, and this is where I was going with my point, is the context, right? Mm-hmm. Because people watching that for the first time, like yourselves, wouldn't have known Zio was coming.
No.
Right? You would have just sit, like, on the first airing, you would have had no idea Zio was coming.
Yeah.
Right?
Right,
because this wasn't an age of spoilers on the internet. It wasn't an age of knowing that stuff had been recorded years in advance. Mm. Traditionally at that time, storytelling from season to season with children's television programs wasn't this continuous, right? Because seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers never really stopped airing, right? There weren't huge gaps between season 1 and season 2 and season 3. They just kind of kept going a bit, right?
Right. It's like,
well, so it felt when you were a kid like one big season, right? A bit. So yeah. Then you had this huge thing happen, and then there was this big gap where it was long enough for them to replay the entire season with the Zio shorts at the beginning before Zio, right? So as a kid, that must have been monumental, not knowing what was coming. But as an adult, it's a very different look. Not only are we as adults more used to cliffhanger endings for shows now that, like, we watch shows like, just to use examples that we've used today, Doctor Who or things like Loki, or just we're used to dealing with cliffhangers leading into a season that's not coming for a year, right?
Yeah.
And on top of that, we know Zio's happening.
Right.
So it's even if we weren't used to the cliffhanger, we know what's coming. But as an adult, the cliffhanger does lose a lot, even without the blooper thing.
Well, at the end of the day, we've talked at length about how we are adults that are taking a children's show way too seriously. So yeah. it's going to be the reality because we are adults and we are reviewing a medium that is designed for 10-year-olds.
And it also doesn't help that I'm fairly certain that all four of us here in one way or another are familiar with tropes and writing styles and like how stuff like that works. You know what I mean? Like, obviously I might have less experience than say Mike, who's, you know, written a movie and all that, but like I'm familiar enough with it that, like, you know, like the kayfabe is dead there for me, you know. Whereas like okay, I can see behind the curtain a little bit, and I know what's obviously we know what's going to happen because there's a whole new box set like sitting right next to the one that I've just got all these notes for. That's raring to go. I've got Zio, I've got Turbo, I've got In Space, yes, and you know, Lost Galaxy. And so, but yeah, there's a huge disconnect between how I felt as a kid and how I feel as an adult watching this episode again. You know, and yeah, wow. It's funny to me because I came into this show, like Voices from the Grid, I came into this with like the rose colored glasses on, and they have effectively been destroyed and stomped.
They have been smashed into pieces.
Ben literally took them off your face, crushed them with his bare hands, threw it on the ground, lit it on fire.
Yeah.
And then kicked the ashes.
I hate to say it wasn't me that did that. It was the show that did that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
accept the credit, Ben.
No, honestly, if we could have gotten through this and Mike and Brian had still had their rose-colored glasses on, I would have been absolutely cool with that. That you'd still love this show the way that you loved it.
I mean, there's a but there because I still kind of do. I mean, it's
but you don't like, love it in the same way, do you?
There's still a nostalgia factor.
Right. Yes, and it's always going to have a special place in my heart because
right, but you know, it's not the same.
No.
Anyway, this is stuff we should be talking about in the next episode.
Yes,
sure, fair enough.
I think that's the best segue to go to the close.
All right,
I think we've pretty much talked about everything that we could talk about at this point.
I honestly, this was a really good chat, and thank you for letting me host like the final like. Episode where we talk about Mighty Morphin. Mm-hmm. You know, like obviously, so if you're tuning in, next time that you listen, I believe Ben's gonna be the one hosting for the roundup, and then we're gonna get into Zio, everybody. So Zio, get excited.
Zio.
Because big things are happening. But in the interim, okay, Sasha, where can we find you on social media?
Crying in a corner.
With Rocky.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, no, Rocky can stay. I have my own corner, and Rocky can stay in his own corner and get lost in it, okay?
And eat pudding or something. I don't know.
Pat and sell. Anyway, you can find me over at geekgirl101@tumblr.com. At the time of this recording, which is November 12th, 2021, I have actually just reviewed Marvel's Disney Plus 2021 preview, so you can check that out. You can also find me occasionally on Twitter over at Geeky Kaplan, and that is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the entire Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. And on this show / Nerdy-Notions.
All right.
Which eventually we'll do more episodes of.
Maybe.
Yes.
When Sasha's not buried in schoolwork.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mike, where can we find you on the World Wide Web's?
You can find me on the Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing. I hope by the time this episode airs at twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. And of course, everything is on the website txhthockey.com and for the show specific, VFTG.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much. And Ben, which apropos of that, get ready, Mike. Ben, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find me doing the video game thing along with my good lady wife and friend of the show, Jordan, Mr. NJ Johnson, who will have been appearing this season in our pre-scripted intros as our narrator over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
Mike made a boo boo.
If you're happy and you know it, say you swear. Anyways,
you can also hear me and Mike and one of our random friends every month talking over the wrestling that we are watching over at
txhthockey.com/awesomemania.
which is a watch-along podcast that we talk about old wrestling pay-per-views and just kind of riff on them, much in the vein of like Mystery Science Theater 3000 or
nice.
Riff Tracks or that kind of thing. And they are designed to be watched along. You can find this show on Twitter at
VFTG underscore PR.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. And as for myself, you can find me on Instagram at Dragon22. You can find me on Twitter at One Drunk Geek. You can also find me at castwavestudios.com, where we record other podcasts. And we have a show called One Drunk Geek that you can check out. And it's been going on for quite some time now. And I have another plug. What is it? Oh, yeah, it's the one that makes Mike angry. Sorry. You can find me on TikTok at BlueRanger_BRI. And follow that for plenty of different musings on my life and also Power Ranger stuff. And with that, Ben, my friend, for the final time during Mighty Morphin, please.
So I will say, in honor of this being a little bit of Billy Swan song, you could definitely use the formula Y equals MX plus B to calculate the slope at which this season went downhill. But it is time for us to drop Mighty Morphin Power Rangers like it was my hopes and dreams. And I will leave you, as I always do, along with the others, by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, be sure to grab your Zeo crystals.
Ooh.
We technically have one episode
left. We do have one episode left in this season.
Oh, okay, fine. And until next time, be sure to grab your power coins and power morphers. Oh.
And with great editing responsibilities, may the power protect you.
Well, what a perfect representation of the last three seasons, a pile of rubble and a swear word.